CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, December 15. Hello again, Orion Samuelson with my annual Christmas laryngitis. Seems like this happens every year. But Max will be joining me, and we'll talk markets with his special guest, Donna Hughes from Amarillo, Texas. And, of course, we'll take a look at the Wall Street story that is sounding like a broken record, because on this Friday, all three major indices on Wall Street set yet another record high close, climbing new heights. All major sectors pushing higher as a long-awaited tax bill that would cut corporate tax rates pretty much looked like it would win support among lawmakers. Republicans were expected to release final details of their plan with decisive votes in the House and the Senate seen next week. By late afternoon this day, CNBC was reporting that Republican Marco Rubio would support a compromise bill. Rubio had spoken out against the bill as he sought an expansion of child tax credits. And so David Joy, who is the chief market strategist at American Financial in Boston, said it's the Marco Rubio watch today, and the market seems to be responding to the latest on whether he will or he won't support the tax reform bill. He went on to say they're not completely out of the woods yet, but it's getting closer and closer. The bill, which in its current form proposes to lower the corporate tax rate to 21% from 35%, has been a major catalyst for this year's sharp increase in the stock market. So let's look at the numbers for this last day of the week as we approach the holidays. The Dow Jones closed up 137 points, ending the day and the week at a record high, 24,645. The S&P 500 closed up 23 points, ending the day and the week at 2675. And the NASDAQ closed up 77 points, ending at 6933 for the day. But for the week, the S&P went up nearly 1%. The Dow went up 1.3%, and the NASDAQ gained nearly 1.5% for the week. Taking a look at some of the other notes in the marketplace on this last trading of the week, a day of the week, as we approach a four-day trading week, 2 weeks in a row, the S&P 500 and the Dow on track to close higher for the fourth week in a row, while the NASDAQ set to post its first weekly gain in 3 weeks. And the S&P Financial Index was the biggest riser percentage gainer of all the S&P sectors, with an increase of 1.4%. Banks, of course, are seen as one of the biggest beneficiaries of tax reform. The Consumer Staples Index went up 1.2%. Costco, its biggest percentage gainer, with a 3.7% increase after the retailer reported upbeat results. Now, on top of the boost expected from the tax law overhaul, Ameriprise's Joy said investors may have been encouraged by the Unilever's agreement to sell its margarine and spreads business to U.S. private equity firm KKR for a little over $8 billion. CSX tumbled 7.5% today after the railroad said its chief executive, Hunter Harrison, was taking medical leave amid its controversial turnaround plan. And stocks trading volume expected to be higher than normal today due to quadruple witching. That, of course, the simultaneous expiration of U.S. options and futures contracts. So that's what we watch today in the marketplace. But, of course, we're spending more time watching Capitol Hill to see how the vote will turn out and if they'll do any more picking apart the tax reform bill. So that will be watched carefully over the weekend for signs that there will be something happening positive in the eyes of many of the investors and traders. Now, looking ahead to next week, I remind you it will be a 4.5-day trading week because the markets will close at noon on Friday ahead of the Christmas weekend. And, of course, the markets will be closed on Monday for the observance of Christmas, and then the following week, the observance of the New Year's holiday. Now, as we look ahead to activities next week, the U.S. Commerce Department's report on Tuesday will likely show that housing starts in November have slipped to an annual rate of 1.25 million units. That would be compared to 1.3 million units in the previous month. New home sales numbers due on Friday are forecast to drop to 651,000 units in November from 685,000 units in October. While existing home sales figures are scheduled to be released on Wednesday, other reports due out next week, well, we're looking for the University of Michigan's Consumer Index, its Consumer Sentiment Index for December. And Thursday, of course, the weekly initial claims for state unemployment benefits. And they're expecting those numbers to have increased to 231,000 from 225,000 in the previous week. And gross domestic product final figures are also due on the same day. Consumer spending, which is scheduled for release on Friday, is predicted to have increased by 0.4% in November. Well, there's a lot more to talk about if the voice will last long enough to do that. So I'll take a sip of water and take a break, and then we'll continue talking agricultural markets with Donna Hughes from Amarillo, Texas, here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Visiting with us this weekend to talk about the markets, Donna Hughes, Daniels Trading, Amarillo, Texas. It's great to have you here in our studio in Illinois as we visit this morning.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk about Daniels Trading to begin with and its involvement there in the Lone Star State. Is it only in Texas, Daniels Trading?
Daniels Trading corporate offices are actually located in downtown Chicago, and I am the branch office manager of our Amarillo branch.
Tell us about that particular branch. One could imagine it's somewhat of a diverse portfolio of crops you would work with there.
Yes, absolutely. We are right in the middle of the panhandle, upper panhandle of Texas. So we have many producers that grow wheat, Kansas City hard red winter wheat. We have corn producers, plenty of livestock producers, and an abundance of cotton producers this year.
Well, let's talk individually about some of those commodities. Wheat. We got a reminder in a USDA report the other day that there's no shortage of wheat in the world. It seems like there's plenty of it. In fact, I think the report showed the Canadians had an even larger crop than earlier anticipated this year.
Yes, the crop's been building worldwide over the last few years, which is not good news for wheat producers. In our area, we've had several that have actually just gone to growing for cattle grazing or, unfortunately, for insurance payments. But right now, we are experiencing a very dry period in our area, and so there is concern over this year's wheat crop as we head into dormancy.
the acreage was probably trimmed back to begin with, right? Back in the fall. We'll find out, I guess, next month, won't we? The USDA will release wheat acreage numbers.
Absolutely. That January report will give us more numbers, a little bit more than what they let on in the December report.
Grazing of wheat is not unusual in your part of the world, is it?
No, actually not. You know, in the fall, cattle producers will put the calves on wheat pasture, and what that does is that stimulates the wheat root, and so they'll keep them on, you know, through the winter months, and then in springtime they'll take them off.
Winter kill. We talk about it every winter in that winter wheat crop seeded in the fall. There's always, it seems, some winter kill. But the images from your part of the world in the past few days have really gotten attention. There was a fair amount of snow in Texas.
Yes, we have had some snowstorms come through, and unfortunately, it's not as widespread as what we need it to. Subsoil moisture levels, we really need to get those up in order to get this wheat crop through to the springtime.
The snow can insulate. It does help protect against temperatures, does it not, when you do get that? And if you get the 1-2 shot of enough snow, enough moisture, that can really be beneficial.
Absolutely. You know, the worst thing that we could have is very dry conditions and then have, you know, sub-zero weather come rolling through. So we're really hoping to get, some sort of good snowfall here. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem like that's going to be happening in the near term.
Some of my Twitter friends, I noted, were putting photographs out there in the past few days of snow in yet-to-be-harvested cotton fields. How much cotton was still out there?
There's plenty of cotton still out there. We service producers from South Texas all the way through up into the upper panhandle. And, you know, we still have producers working on getting that cotton out of the fields.
Is this a little bit later than usual for the cotton harvest, finishing it up?
It is. You know, this year we have a good amount of producers who have either never grown cotton before or they haven't grown cotton in about 10 years. And so, you know, the growing, the marketing, the whole deal could be brand new for them in many ways. And so, you know, we've seen a lot different events going on with our cotton producers this year.
Share with me a little more about that. It seems to me that's a pretty giant leap for someone who has been a grain producer and decides, well, we're going to transition into cotton.
Absolutely. You know, we started getting calls into the office January, February of this past year with grain producers asking us about the marketing aspects of cotton. And it was actually on the urging of their lenders, just because of the way the economics penciled out, that they would switch over to cotton for this year. So we've seen quite a bit of that.
A significant increase in your part of the world in cotton acreage?
Absolutely.
And that then begs the question, is there the infrastructure to serve those producers? Is there the gin capacity, for example?
Well, you know, we're starting to see that backing up just a little bit. I expect that we'll see more of that as we head into the end of this month and going into January. Last year, I know we had the gins backed up probably till February, early March last year. And this year, with the increased acres, I'm thinking it's only going to, you know, be repeated.
The World Ag Supply Demand report the other day was friendly to cotton, was it not, in terms of the supplies?
Actually, it was. Right now, we are experiencing a good amount of exports for the U.S., and also we have some quality issues going on right now. That's the exports and the quality issues are actually keeping the market supported at this time.
What are your expectations on the cotton price as we go in through the first quarter of 2018?
You know, right now in the near term, we're thinking that we could possibly get up to those Hurricane Irma highs, you know, up around that 76-cent level. And our producers, you know, we know that we're probably going to be getting more cotton acres in 2018. And so, you know, we're encouraging producers to get some sort of price protection on either by selling ahead or using the markets to lock in those higher prices when they come.
this is a reminder of how that pendulum can swing. I mean, I remember not many years ago, some growers, for example, in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, saying, we're getting out of cotton. Some sold their shares in cotton gins. Some of the gins were shut down altogether. The market was sending the signal. Now the market is saying, we need more cotton?
Absolutely. You know, like I said, the exports have been very good. We've got a situation in India with a bollworm infestation. You know, there's some ingredients in the news arena lately that's given us a bump up in pricing. And so, you know, good way for producers to take advantage.
The Chinese market, of course, and Chinese production has been significant in soybeans. Has it also been in cotton?
It has. You know, different times of the year, we've seen China announce that they're going to be releasing reserves into the market. And so, you know, with that anticipation, traders and producers kind of wait and see. We have had word of quality issues with the cotton that they do release. And so at times it doesn't have as much of an effect on the market as we think it would. But, you know, with China, you can get anything and everything. So, you know, just kind of watching that as we go.
Talking about the pendulum swinging, before we leave the subject of wheat, I've been so impressed over the years with how quickly we can go from bin busting surpluses in wheat around the world to in just a few months wondering, you know, oh my goodness, you know, are we going to have enough? What's your feeling about wheat? Is there any prospect for recovery there in terms of prices? We look into 2018, or is this burdensome supply surplus hanging over the market going to continue?
You know, unfortunately, you know, I'm thinking that we'll probably have these lower prices for a while. If we can get something turned around into 2018, that would be great. You know, exports have to really kick up. You know, we did have this morning, we had a good export report for wheat, and so that put some optimism in the market, but we need to see those numbers consistent.
Looking ahead toward the plantings of the corn and soybean crops in 2018, it seems like there's some division of opinion here. I know some analysts are saying, well, producers, especially in the Midwest, are used to planting corn. It's something they do very well. They are not going to diminish their corn acreage that much. I have others who say, well, you know, that those soybean yields were surprising in 2017. Many of the growers like what they saw, that perhaps for the first time ever we could see more soybean acreage in the United States planted than corn acreage in 2018. What's your feel about that situation, Donna?
Certainly, you know, that's a possibility. You know, it's all going to come down to economics. And so, you know, producers are going to have to look at their bottom line and see what pencils out best for them. We saw this situation, you know, grains versus cotton, you know, this year. And so next year, you know, we may have that same situation between corn and soybeans.
And quite often the market tries to buy acres. We see that play in the spring, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, the traders, producers, they'll be watching to see what those numbers are anticipated to be. And markets will reflect, you know, buying in of acres if they think that that's what needs to be done.
As far as corn, the other day in that supply-demand report, there was a good reminder that doggone it, ethanol still matters. And I think USDA boosted, did they not, the amount of corn that they see being utilized for ethanol production?
Yes, ethanol numbers have been very good, and so, you know, that plays into a good part of demand with the corn. But, you know, we are seeing a substantial amount on, you know, domestic and worldwide on corn production. So, you know, it's a good light in the corn market to see the ethanol production numbers.
There's a lot of corn out there, you're reminding us, right?
Absolutely.
What are your growers who grow corn thinking? What are you hearing from them? And I guess one thing that comes to mind, doggone it, it's not that many weeks from now that corn producers in southern Texas will be planting their crop, right?
Absolutely. You know, we've got producers that, you know, will be starting to plant the corn acres down there. And as we, you know, think about the economics of it, you know, some producers are thinking that, you know, keeping those bins empty for right now, trying to get as liquid as they can before they start planting corn. And especially if they have off-farm storage, you don't want to be paying for storage on a crop, with price levels the way they are, and then you have your new crop going in. So those are things we'll be watching for.
Some of that corn acreage will be planted as early as what, mid to late February?
Yep, absolutely.
Great to have you in here. Thanks for sharing some comments with us today. We sure appreciate it, Donna.
Appreciate being here. Thank you.
Donna Hughes, Daniels Trading, Office Manager at Amarillo, Texas.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Before we get back to the world of agriculture, some other earnings reports. Yes, we still do have some earnings report ahead of the Christmas holiday. And so coming up on Tuesday of next week, the package delivery company, FedEx Corporation, will report. And, of course, the delivery companies are being watched carefully to make sure that packages are delivered on time. And also on Thursday, the world's largest footwear maker, Nike, expected to post sales growth in the second quarter, helped by stronger demand for its sneakers in international markets like China and Europe, and early signs of improvement in demand from North America. Investors will look forward to how its five-year growth target would impact its full-year earnings forecast. General Mills, the owner of Yoplait and Progresso brands, will report its second quarter results on Wednesday. And chipmaker Micron Technology reports first quarter results on Tuesday. And finally, BlackBerry will report its third quarter results on Wednesday, and cruise operator Carnival Corporation expected to post an increase in its fourth quarterly revenue coming on Tuesday. And the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index for December expected to come in at 70 points in next week's report activity. So let's look at commodities. Let's take a look at the oil industry. Oil prices were mixed today, ending the week, lingering below two-year highs as the continuing outage of a North Sea pipeline gave support, while climbing U.S. output and weak gasoline demand kept a lid on gains. Brent crude futures ended the day down 8 points, ending at $63.23 a barrel. U.S. West Texas Intermediate crude settled higher, up 26 cents, at $57.32 a barrel. U.S. Texas crude hit a two-year high of $59 plus a nickel on November 24th. So that's the oil industry. Now let's look at the other basic industry, I think more basic than oil, and that's food and production in the agricultural community. So as we look at that, let's go to the Chicago Board of Trade. Corn dropped to contract lows today on a technical setback. The benchmark Board of Trade corn futures contract turned lower. Corn futures under pressure from massive domestic stockpiles following a bumper harvest hit contract lows late in the trading session today. Corn, the March contract, ended down 1.25 cents a bushel. So it will start the trade on Monday at 347.5. Soybeans, on the other hand, ended the day higher. The soybean market closed firm thanks to strong export demand. Gains were limited by abundant supplies following a bumper U.S. harvest and now concerns dropping off a little bit about weather limiting production in Argentina. The USDA reported the sale of 257,000 tons of soybeans to China and 126,000 tons of soybeans to unknown destinations. And for the week, the most active soybean futures contract fell 2.2%. So that's a quick look at the grain market, but there is some concern now about weather in the U.S. Plains wheat area. Drought that's leaving wheat in the plains vulnerable to freeze damage. That's coming because of a combination of delays to autumn planting and dry conditions in the southern U.S. plains that have left the hard red winter crop vulnerable to freeze damage. That, according to crop experts, who said we could further tighten supplies of high-protein wheat. A cold spell forecast for later this month, and any freeze in the coming months could pose an outsized threat to supplies. Then let's take a look at the livestock industry. Chicago Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures today closed up 2 1/3%. That's their biggest one-day gain in over a month, after packers paid more for livestock than expected. The December live cattle finished $2.62 a pound higher at $118.90. And today, cattle in the plains went for $118 to $120 per hundredweight. And some processors needed cattle, adding into their final week of slaughters for the year prior to the Christmas and New Year's holidays. So what else is happening? Well, I spent some time in the office of Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue on Tuesday, finding him to be very optimistic that we are going to get a NAFTA agreement that will not tear apart agricultural trade between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Some of the other things that the Secretary of Agriculture wanted to talk about was the Forest Service situation because of the huge fire season we've had this year in California and some southern states and also some western states. So Forest Service presence in Southern California has increased as nearly 950 personnel are now engaged in the effort to fight those raging fires and to save lives. The critical fire weather conditions continue to threaten large portions of California after fires have burned across the state for weeks. And now we're looking at gusty winds continuing. And the more we spend fighting fires, the less we have for forest management and preventative maintenance, according to the Secretary of Agriculture, who said 2017 marked a year of unprecedented wildfire activity. More than 2 million acres of national forest land have burned, along with millions more acres of state and privately owned land. On that, we'll close again with a reminder, you have a 4.5-day trading week next week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson saying thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.